Well, guess I'll just go fishing for more crawdads. Now we don't deal with those Mississippi crawdads. We're all about them Louisiana crawdads. That's where real money comes from. Those New Orleans style.
Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 47 of Dynasty's Child, the flagship pirate ship fantasy baseball podcast of the Dynasty Guru. I am your fill-in host again, Adam Lawler, and I am a writer at the Dynasty Guru. With me is Keaton DeRocher. Keaton, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good. Ready to take on this pod with a two-man game.
Yeah, we're going to tag team this. It's going to be great.
One of us is the pitcher and one of us is the catcher, and we'll let you decide who's who, you the listeners.
Do not decide. Just, yeah. Okay, so anyway. So later on in the episode, we are going to have Sports Illustrated writer, former Deadspin Fangraphs, Hardball Times and Baseball Prospectus writer, extremely accomplished Emma Bacalari on the pod with us to discuss all things baseball. It's going to largely be real baseball with some fantasy overlay. So please give it a listen. It's going to be fantastic. Before we kind of get into this, please rate and review us on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you're listening on. Those reviews are a huge help. And we love to get more listeners and reach out as far as we can. Let your friends know, let your family know. We are here for you. Keaton and I are going to touch on a few things together, and then Emma's going to come on. If you have any questions for us, you can submit the questions via the Facebook group, the Fantasy Baseball subreddit, Twitter at Dynasty's Child, or email dynastieschildpod@gmail.com. All right, we are going to jump right into transactions. There are no transactions to talk about. If for those of you who don't know, Will Myers is back on the DL. Mike Trout has an injury issue. Oh, Keaton, I actually did want to get your reaction on this. Lance McCullers went to the DL again, and we can have a moment of silence for him if we want. But what is your feeling on him and his long-term fantasy value? Where do you think you're going to probably drop him in your rankings going forward?
Yeah, that was actually a good one. I forgot that he might have biffed his elbow pretty hard there. It's,
he's not going to pitch for the rest of the year, right? I mean,
I wouldn't expect him to. No. As far as like where I would have him ranked next year, I still think he's a good pitcher when he's out there, but it's just one of those. Yeah, risks with pitchers, sometimes they get hurt. But he's, from his other injuries, he hasn't shown any ill effects. He's still been effective. So assuming that he hasn't completely destroyed his elbow, I'd expect him to come back, start of next year, be healthy. So he probably would end up being right around the same rank he was this year, which I don't know.
22?
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say 20 to 30. So that makes sense.
I don't know. I don't know. I just don't see him pitching more than 160 innings any year. I want a guy in my SP1 or my SP2 that's going to pitch 175, 180 innings every year. So I would probably put him probably in the last late 30s, seasons, early 40s.
That's way too far down. Last two seasons, I mean, what has Kershaw given you? And he's still been...
Oh, but Kershaw and Lance McCullers are totally different.
Kershaw's had a ton of injuries. I mean, I understand your point for the breadth of their career, but you're not knocking Kershaw down for being injured all the time and only giving you 160 innings, but you're knocking McCullers down.
Well, it's 160 elite innings, whereas McCullers is 160 very good innings. Like, right. I would probably take Walker Buehler over Lance McCullers. Wouldn't you?
Sure. That's doesn't seem super outlandish. I still think 20 to 30 is not outrageous.
Okay. I mean, okay, let me do one more would you rather. Zach Godley.
Oh, God, he's terrible.
Ooh. That's kind of hot take-ish.
Yeah, is it?
He's been pretty damn good. I mean, he's put together a string now where he... I feel like Zach Godley...
a string, okay.
It's been like six or seven consecutive starts. It's been pretty damn good, and he was good last year. I just
six or seven starts does not make a season.
But six or seven starts can definitely value somebody in the mid or early 20s for a top 20 pitcher.
Nah, see, I would have him late 30s, early 40s.
I'm not. You're talking about Zach Godley.
Yeah, I'm not a believer in him at all.
All right. All right, so basically you're kind of a hold on Lance McCullers, and you're still a believer regardless of the fact that he can't stay healthy.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, got it. Minor league demotions. Really quick, two Rockies that I want to ask you about just because we've talked about at least one of them till we were blue in the face, but the other one, Tom Murphy. How do you feel about him? Do you feel like he could eventually become a really strong offensive contributor for dynasty leagues? Where do you value him as far as a dynasty catcher going forward? He was called up, he did fairly well, he biffed a defensive play and they demoted him. Do you think he's worth a buying low on right now?
Yeah, I mean, anybody in cores always has that bump, and he's at a really weak position, so if he's a guy that you can get low, go for it, because he's going to have a whole bunch of playing time next year for sure. And in the near future, I think he's going to be back relatively soon. I don't think it's going to be a long demotion. I really think it was just a reaction to their position in the standings and wanting to play more established players down the stretch here. They were my pick for one of the wild cards preseason. So the AL West is going to be fascinating to watch as we come down the stretch, because they're all separated by like two games. But he's a guy in cores at a weak position. I wouldn't have any problem going to get him.
Okay. And the only other person that I wanted to pick your brain about before we move on, and this is actually another pitcher who went on the DL and has a hard time staying healthy. Patrick actually wrote about him in the triple play for the Los Angeles Dodgers, and that's Alex Wood. He went on the 10-day disabled list with a left adductor tendonitis. If you were to ask me where the adductor is on the body, I would get it wrong. But, you know, this has been a continuing issue for him, staying healthy, that is. How do you see Alex Wood going forward? Do you value him, or are you holding him, or are you kind of selling off at this point?
Well, again, he's another guy that the innings that he's pitched healthy have been effective. I'd be shocked if you told me he got over 100 innings twice in his career.
Over 100? He's definitely got over 100 twice in his career.
So there you go. Consider me shocked. He's one of the same situations. I mean, I wouldn't peg him as an ace or someone. His market value, I feel like, is exactly that, is when he's going to give you something consistent when he's healthy. He's just never, ever healthy. So whatever that market price is, if you have eyes for Wood, sure. I wouldn't overpay for him, though. But whatever that market price is for a guy that's always injured and doesn't pitch a ton.
Alex Wood has pitched 100 plus innings four times in his career. His career high is 189. He's pitched 123 innings this year to the tune of a 3.58 ERA, 3.53 FIP, 3.71 XFIP. I think he's pretty damn good, but it sounds to me like you're pretty down on him, right?
Is market price down?
I don't know. He's ranked 35 on our preseason pitcher list, so he is at least 20 spots or 10 spots below Lance McCullers.
I have no idea where I had either of those guys on my own personal lists. Mm-hmm. But it's a similar situation.
Okay. All right, that's fair. I like Alex Wood a lot. I wish he could stay healthy and pitch two or three consecutive 180 innings seasons, but it's just not happening. And
if I remember from Patrick's write-up too, he was not convinced that Alex Wood was spectacular either.
I don't think he's spectacular. I just think he's really good. And I think that there's a space for that, especially in this environment. So, I mean, if you're not going to get an ace and you're looking for that number two, I think in a season where he's pitching 170 plus innings, he's a number two pitcher for you, or at least a low end number two pitcher.
So how many seasons has he hit 170?
Two. But he's been around for a while, so that's not saying much.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like I'm saying, it's frustrating to see because it's there. He just needs the volume. And I see him in the same way I see Lance McCullers. So. Okay, so.
Because you slid McCullers down like 20 spots.
Well, I know. Well, I mean, I said he was in the late 30s. So, you know, Alex Wood's at 35, 36. So I'm not too far off there. I mean, I think they're late SP2s, both of them. And if they could stay healthy, they'd be high-end SP2s. That's all.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll welcome on Emma Baccalieri of Sports Illustrated. We'll be back in a minute. Now welcoming onto our pod is Sports Illustrated author, former Deadspin, Baseball Prospectus, Fangraphs, Hardball Times, and Duke Chronicle contributor, Emma Baccalieri. And we wanted to kind of pick your brain about a number of things, but we actually wanted to just talk a little bit of baseball, just really what's happening around the league over the last week. I want to start off by just talking a little bit about my favorite player and the bane of Keaton's existence right now, Mike Trout. What do you feel like he's going to be done for the season? Do you think that he'll come back and when the September call-ups come around, he'll just fade off this year? Or do you think he's just going to keep playing through it and try to play as much of the 162 as he can?
Yeah, I'm really hoping that he's not done for the year or close to done for the year here, just because, you know, obviously it's tailed off a bit here recently, but, you know, just thinking of how much fun this was at the beginning of the year to have these, you know, crazy conversations about, like, is this going to be, like, this ultimate historic greatness? Like, how much can he do here? It would just be, you know, such a bummer to see that end quietly with a small wrist injury as the team just kind of falls to pieces and nothing happens. So I'm hoping that there's more here. I don't have any special insight here from, you know, a reporting standpoint. So I don't really know other than what we've all seen come out, just of him, you know, out again, getting this cortisone shot, I think it was a few days ago. So, you know, I guess we'll see, but I just from a fan standpoint, I'm certainly hoping that there's more here and that he's able to tap back into a little of what he had going on earlier.
Who do you think is going to hit more home runs the rest of the season? Shohei Ohtani or Mike Trout?
That's a good one. you know, I guess I could be happy with either one there. You know, especially, you know, if Ohtani doesn't come back on the mound, if we can just see him hit a bunch more dingers, that'll maybe salvage a little bit of the fun there too. But yeah, I guess if I had to pick one, I'd go with Trout, but who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ohtani's pace right now is like a homer a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Outside of Joey Gallo, he's like the only one that's been destroying baseballs over the last week or 2 weeks. It's been insane. Joey Gallo hit another two home runs today and they were monsters. He's hit like six home runs in the last week. It's insane. Keaton, yeah, do you have anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, wrist injuries suck. And we saw Bogaerts last year try and play through his, and that didn't go well at all. So at the very least, if Trout does come back, I hope that the Angels are giving him plenty of time to get healthy and not trying to rush it. Because obviously there's no point. It doesn't make any sense to rush him back because they're not going anywhere. But just because he's a baseball player and assume he enjoys playing the game and will probably want to get back as fast as possible, I just hope that they give him ample time to recover before putting him back in the lineup. And if that means that he ends up missing the rest of the year, as much as that would suck for this year, I'd be pretty psyched for next year with a fully healthy Mike Trout. So that's my two cents.
I really do think he's going to end up coming back. I mean, Shohei Ohtani's playing with a torn tendon in his arm, and they're just like, yeah, go ahead and play, even though they have absolutely nothing to play for at this point. I mean, unless he's planning on getting an injection in the offseason, I don't know.
I hated that. I feel like they should have just given him the surgery.
And do you have anything you want to talk about specifically around the league, Ian or Keaton? Fuck. I'm gonna do this all podcast. Let's just embrace it, lean into it.
Yeah, I do actually. Daniel Palka from the White Sox has actually been hitting the ball really hard all year. I actually don't know how the White Sox got him. He was in Minnesota last year. So I don't know if he was a Rule 5 guy or how the hell the White Sox got him, but they have him now. And he made his debut with them after about the first month or so of the season when they had a bunch of injuries to their outfield. And he's really just mashed ever since. He has some elite exit velocity, 94 miles an hour, launch angle, 14 degrees, which is also pretty incredible. An insane 16.2 barrel percentage. And then kind of going along with the prototypical power hitting numbers, he has a 33.9 K percentage, which is quite a lot. And then a 5.3 walk rate, which is not so great. So kind of stuff that probably would make Patrick happy. But if you're looking for power, he's a guy that is significantly underowned. In Fantrax, he's only 16% owned in all of their leagues. So he's a guy that you can get pretty cheap, but is actually doing rather well.
Emma, is Trevor Bauer the best pitcher in the MLB or the best pitcher in the AL?
See, I think my pick for both those questions would be Chris Sale right now, although Bauer is getting extremely close to toppling him over there. I will say this question of who's the best right now is one of the ones that I find interesting because it shows how different the three WARs are in that all three have a different top three set of pitchers right now. Like Bauer has been leading, I've been on top of the Fangraphs leaderboard for WAR for quite a while now since they use FIP instead of
And like, he's not afraid to tell anybody either.
No.
But I think BRF has Aaron Nola right now, and Warp has Max Scherzer. I love those ones where they each give you the three calculations give you, three different answers. I think I still have to go with Sale right now. As I said, Bauer seems like every night gets closer to pushing him off there, and especially with, Sale missing a start here right now. Maybe Bauer will overtake him in my mental ranking, but yeah.
So you just said that Scherzer is leading in Warp and Nola's leading in BWAR?
Yes, yeah, he is.
And where does DeGrom lie in all of this?
So I have them up right now. DeGrom is second in BWAR, although he's quite a bit behind, 6.9 to 6.5. And then in F4, DeGrom is third. And then in Warp, DeGrom is fifth. Yeah, towards the top, but not at the top on any of them.
I know this is kind of a hot topic right now. Do you feel like he has a case to be the NL MVP?
I think he does. I don't think he'll win, but I think he has a legitimate case. I think he deserves bonus points for making it through this year without like actually murdering any of his teammates. Nice like intangible bonus to mark up for him. But it just, what he's done this year has been incredible. And I think, I mean, you now see him with his, with what people who are voting tend to use, like, certainly not wins, obviously, but his ERA is now like 1.77, I think, like getting close to that, like really like eye popping, like, whoa, territory. And yeah, I think he does have a case.
Yeah, there really isn't an obvious choice. I think like Javi Baez comes to mind. He's having a pretty good year, but he's not really blowing anybody away. So if there, I think this might be the best chance that a pitcher would have to win it, and DeGrom's been pretty nasty.
Yeah, I think he really has a case to be, I mean, in my opinion, the best pitcher in the NL right now. Scherzer's been great, and he was on a torrid pace to start the year. He's kind of tailed off. That's not to say that he's been bad, but it's just he was at a ridiculous pace for K's earlier this year. And Kershaw's been dinged up. Nola's been great, but I just feel like DeGrom, when you look at the landscape right now, is probably, I think, the NL MVP at the moment. Emma, do you have anything that's just you're pining to talk about right now?
Not particularly. One that's maybe not on the level of pining, but that kind of struck a note with me today was Chris Archer made his second start for the Pirates today. And something that had really interested me from his first start was that he threw his sinker a lot, which he has never been a pitch that he's used that much. And obviously the Pirates have a pretty big history with throwing down in the zone and getting their guys to throw two seamers. And so he threw it quite a bit in that first start last week. And in the second start today, he barely threw it at all. Which, yeah, again, is two starts. Who knows what this means, if anything. But it was interesting to me to see that, you know, that first start seemed like, oh, like, is this a total approach change with this trade? And completely backed away from it here today. So, yeah.
Better results today, too, than his first start.
Yes. The only other thing that came up that I wanted to talk about was Rafael Devers came back from the DL. There, Ian Kinsler is still on the DL. When he gets back and Devers is back, do you feel like there's going to be any split in time for Devers? Do you think he's going to play all 7 days of the week? Or do you think he's going to get platooned with, it's Escobar still there, right?
Nunez,
Eduardo Nunez.
Yeah, I mean, Kinsler's going to be playing second full time, and it's going to be Devers' job to lose.
Do you think he's going to
get the bulk of the at-bats? Okay. No, I don't think they will.
Okay. Emma, we wanted to pick your brain about a few things that you have written over the last few years.
Yeah.
There were a couple articles that Keaton pulled. I said Keaton. Keaton pulled when you were at Deadspin and at Baseball Prospectus. Keaton, which one do you want to start with?
Start with the first one.
You want
to
start
MLB.
With...
was that a cue for me to start talking?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so the first one that I pulled was one that you wrote about MLB positions for Baseball Prospectus and how imagining a positionless baseball. And that was from 2 years ago, and I wanted to bring it back because it seems even more relevant now with the number of crazy platoon players that are getting a bunch of playing time, and fantasy wise it's a bunch of like dual and multi-eligible players. Like Kike Hernandez has played every single position on the diamond except catcher, and I think there's currently a social media movement to try and get the Dodgers to give him a game at catcher so he can play all of them, which I'm hoping for. But also just a bunch of players that it seems like we care less now what someone's position actually is, and really can they just play baseball as a whole and then we'll find some place for them. Like, I remember it was a huge deal when A-Rod moved from shortstop to third base, and everybody was like, how are you going to do that? A-Rod's a shortstop. And then same thing with Hanley Ramirez. He moves from shortstop to third to left to first, and everybody was freaking out about every single move. Neither one of them was really bad.
Yeah.
But it seems like now more than ever, the positionless baseball is really kind of the game that we play now.
Yeah. I mean, I think so much of this is that the shift kind of makes it like a philosophical question almost, if that makes sense. Like, you know, because the rule book doesn't have any specifications of what any position is outside of catcher and pitcher, you know, like there's never really been an impetus to define any of the positions. So, you know, when you're working in an environment where you can say, like, the shortstop is whoever is written in the lineup as the shortstop that day, but he can be standing, you know, almost anywhere on the infield into the shallow outfield, like moving all over the place, that it does raise that question of just like, what is it? Is it who we designate as the shortstop, or is it like the specific area of the field? And yeah, it's kind of interesting as a thought experiment, I would say, more than anything. Like, I don't think we'll see anytime soon anything as radical as like an abolition of positions. But yeah, I think it's certainly interesting to watch as we see, again, more and more, not just shifts, but just like strategic positioning that requires moving away from the ideas of a traditional defense and everything that comes with that, and recognition of just, you know, if a guy has the skills, like you said, like you'll find a spot for him on the diamond, and that's not as big a deal as something to produce hand-wringing and concern about in terms of, you know, a guy needing to be in a specific spot every day in the lineup. And yeah, like you said, like, and I guess, can't believe it was 2 years since I wrote that. It seems much more recent than that. But yeah, it's just become a bigger question in the last 2 years. And on another level too, with the increase we've seen in position players pitching, which is like taking it another level with the idea that really they don't have to be any boundaries here at all in terms of positions. Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting one to think about and chew on.
Who's been your favorite position player as far as pitching goes to watch? What's been your most enjoyable one?
The Pablo Sandoval. He was just, the visual there was hard not to love. So
he had a perfect inning too.
Yeah,
he
did. That's probably my favorite, although I've also been, like, on a less jokey note, like, legitimately kind of impressed with Davidson for the White Sox.
Like, his curveball was insane.
Right, and he was, like, I mean, he was throwing in, like, the low 90s the other night. I was, like, I mean, compared with the rest of the White Sox bullpen, like, maybe this isn't really a downgrade at all.
And Rick Ankiel is trying to make a comeback.
Yeah, which is just wild on several levels. Would kind of like to see that, just to know that it could be possible. But yeah, he his first outing apparently went well. He had an inning and it was fine. So I guess we'll see where that goes.
How old is he now? He's got to be like 42, right?
I think I saw he's 39. It's not as old as I thought, because I thought he was mid-40s at least.
Yeah, he's 39. He's recently 39.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. okay, so kind of stemming off of that, what's your feelings or what's your thought on Milwaukee, Emma? How do you feel like that's going to play out?
Yeah, so I mean, I was baffled by it on deadline day. Like, certainly wasn't expecting it, and at first was not a huge fan of it, just on principle. Just didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me, but as I've had a little more time to chew on it, you know, I kind of admired the strategy, honestly. Just the idea of, like, load up on offense and really defense can't be that bad, like, just throw them out there and see how it works. Yeah, just like in an age where it seems like everything is designed to be hyper efficient, and it's kind of nice to just say like, oh, screw it, like it'll somehow work out on defense and we're just not gonna put our focus there. Yeah, I think it'll take a little more time to see exactly how this works out and how these guys adjust to, you know, positions they haven't played before and haven't played much before. But yeah, I kind of admire it just for the chutzpah, I guess, of just dialing in and going for it on their own terms. But yeah, certainly wasn't something I was expecting and was really kind of thrown by there at first.
Yeah, it's almost like the antithesis of what the Cubs were doing during their World Series run. Everybody made a big deal about their defensive proficiencies and how they would just basically hold everybody to one or two runs at the most. And it seems like the Brewers are like, well, we're just going to score a shit ton of runs and good luck.
Yeah.
You know, the strength on strength. Yeah, that'll be an interesting what happens in the playoffs, especially if, you know, like they get into a situation where it's a tight 2-1 ball game in late innings. Are they going to go with the defensive replacement, or are they going to try to, you know, just maybe score one or two more runs to put it away? But yeah. All right. So your Deadspin article, and we'll put a link up on our pod write up, but it's called Major League Baseball Statcast Can Break Sabermetrics. You wrote this probably about almost 9 months ago. So it's not that old at this point, and it probably still has a ton of relevance to what's going on today. Do you want to summarize that for the listeners really quick?
Yeah, sure. Basically, I just went in with this idea that, you know, there's so much to ask about StatCast and how it's being used and how it's designed and who it's designed for, and how it serves teams and audiences and independent analysts and broadcasters and what all of that can mean for baseball. And so I just went in thinking, like, I want to talk to people who can help me try to find, like, comprehensive answers to all of those extremely broad questions. And basically came out with a look at both, you know, in talking to the people at MLBAM who have been working with designing StatCast and then sort of disseminating it to the public. So that includes like Mike Paciello and Tom Tango, names like those that are really associated with it. And they have like pretty strong ideas on the idea that StatCast can be like for everyone and can serve fans at all levels, both those who are like extremely casual fans who don't really care about analytics at all, and people who are super hardcore and are really invested in doing an independent analysis of their own. And then also as part of this, I talked to people who are those independent analysts, and some of them have problems with the way that StatCast's data is being used, and that it's, you know, we have public leaderboards on Baseball Savant, and Savant is coming out with cool new stuff all the time, but that raw data isn't available, and so some people have concerns about, you know, what that means for the league to be the one designing these stats, or this league-owned entity in MLBAM, I should say, and for them to be in control of all this information. So yeah, as you can see, it was kind of a monster there, really long with a lot of sides to it. But yeah, just kind of looking at the position of StatCast in the game today, and what it means for all the stakeholders here, from fans to teams to everyone else.
Yeah, it was a great article.
Oh, thank you.
And it won an award too, right?
Yeah, it did. Which I was very surprised and grateful for. Saber does like research awards every year at the annual analytics conference that they host. And yeah, I was lucky to get one of those.
So what is your... Oh, go ahead, Keaton. Go ahead.
No, you're good.
So what is your feeling on StatCast in general, like your personal feelings on it? Because I know that there are a few writers that we have at the website that feel pretty strongly that it's kind of a sham. And Keaton, I think you know who I'm talking about at this point.
I do.
So do you feel like it has a lot of flaws to it, or do you feel like a lot of what they're putting out is accurate?
I think StatCast itself is super cool. I think some of the ways that StatCast is used is not. But
what specifically do you feel like it's like, what is being used that it's not very cool? Like what is it that?
Yeah, I think that there's in some cases been sort of a rush to embrace all of it as completely meaningful and think that it has a place in every single conversation in a way that it just doesn't. That, you know, there will be like super specific small sample size things being drawn out as evidence of, you know, larger trends and really important performance indicators in ways that just don't seem quite right. I think basically I think it's at a stage where it's really cool that everything can be quantified, but figuring out what exactly is important and meaningful and will have an impact on in terms of predicting future performance and like showing true talent, like it takes time to figure out exactly to separate the signal from the noise, to figure out what's meaningful here. And I think that the like larger community now is still earlier in the process there than I think it's sometimes presented as being, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So that actually is a great lead into one of the first things that I wanted to bring up, and that's launch angle. Because since StatCast has been around calculating this data since 2015, every season the average launch angle in Major League Baseball has gone up. So 2015, it was 10.1. 2016, it was 10.7. 2017, it was 11. And so far this year, it's 11.6. And I think this was one of the really cool things that came with StatCast because just kind of intrinsically, when you're thinking about it, if you hit the ball in the air and angle it up, then it'll lead to more home runs. But no, like until StatCast came around, there was nothing there to measure it. And now since it came out and people can actually see what angle they're hitting the ball at off the bat, they can adjust their mechanics at the plate to try and hit more fly balls, get more home runs. And we can actually see that happening within the data, which I think is really, really cool, and probably something that players in particular weren't really thinking about when they're at the plate before, but now they are, and it's something that's on their mind that I need to swing upward and it'll have greater success with the results of the hits. And I think that's something that was really cool that came out of being able to actually measure these things now.
Right. And I think that, yeah, like you said, like the fact that this can be quantified and we can see it now is so interesting and important. And just the language I think that it gave to it is also interesting in that, you know, like swing up on the ball has been around forever. You know, guys have been thinking, having that as a goal in their head when they step in the box for like literally decades, if not a century. And now that you have this very precise language of like, of launch angle and everything that comes with that and what, you know, an increment of a few degrees can do. Yeah. Just seeing the change that that's brought with it has been really cool. And yeah, I do think that's one of the areas that StatCast has succeeded in, is introducing that language and that precision to this like very fundamental aspect of the game.
Notably, you do not play fantasy baseball, correct?
I do not. I never have. I've thought about it, but I never have.
So knowing that, but knowing what fantasy baseball essentially is, if you were going to recommend to our listeners who are largely all fantasy baseball and probably like the most addicted of the addicted fantasy baseball players, if they were going to look at StatCast, what would you point them to as far as maybe some trends? I know Keaton's referenced launch angle. Are there things specifically maybe for pitchers that you would say, hey, take a look at this when you're trying to identify whether or not a pitcher is truly breaking out?
Yeah, I know you asked about pitchers, but one, if we can top back to hitters for a second, is barrels is what they have for the term that they have for like making great contact, which is uniting exit velocity and launch angle, and kind of determining like who's hitting the most balls like in this sweet spot, both in terms of hitting hard and hitting at the right angle, and that's can be pretty informative. They also have ex-woba, but I actually have never said that out loud before. I'm assuming it's said ex-woba and not X-W-O-B-A. But
no, some weird people say waba, but I think it's woba, so you're good.
Oh, really? I don't like that. Waba.
Yeah. Huh. No, no.
Yeah, yeah, I've never heard, I've only heard ex-woba, but I've also only heard Ian and Patrick say it, so.
Yeah, that was something I never really thought about, and I just said it out loud, and I was like, oh, I assume that's how it's said. But anyways, yeah, that's another interesting one that is kind of trying to strip away some of the noise of guys hitting and look at specifically, you know, what they're achieving and what you should be able to expect from them going forward. And that's one that you can look at for pitchers as well, the ex-woba they've allowed. So yeah, there's a couple interesting things to look at there. And it seems like they're introducing new stuff all the time on Baseball Savant that can be really fun to play around with. And yeah, there's a lot.
Okay. All right. So Keaton, do you want to ask any more questions about this? Or
Nope. I don't have any more questions. The only other thing that I had was I had Jim pull the average launch angle and the average exit velocity because I was curious. The average launch angle increased.
Just for context, hang on, Keaton. Just for context for our listeners and for Emma, Jim Melichar. He is, I don't know if any of you or Emma, you have seen Tableau, but Jim is kind of our resident Tableau expert, and he creates the most stunning, but sometimes it looks like a bunch of flamingos vomited onto a chart and then shows us what's going on in baseball. So go ahead, Keaton.
Yeah, he took the raw data from Baseball Savant, scraped it, and then uploaded it into Tableau and has made some really cool dashboards with it. But so I had him, I was curious about the average launch angle because I assumed that now being able to measure it, we would see a notable increase year over year, which was true. And then the other one I asked him to pull was exit velocity because I was curious if players were trying to hit the ball harder. And probably, maybe surprisingly, but it kind of makes sense now that looking at it, it really hasn't changed much at all. Hmm. Which so it was 87.3 in 2015, 87.7 in 2016. Last year it dipped a mile per hour to 86.6, and then this year it's back up to 87.8. So it's been kind of in the same range the entire time, which it's gone, I guess, slightly up. But I actually think that makes more sense because thinking of myself as a hitter in high school, which obviously is perfectly parallel to major league ball players.
Definitely.
Let's but talk I would,
about that.
I was never not trying to hit the ball hard. So I think that makes a little bit more sense that I'm assuming major league players are up there, not like maybe I'll hit this one just a second and that's as far as I want it to go, so I won't swing as hard. It kind of makes sense that they're swinging as hard as they can, and so exit velocity hasn't changed really much at all. And I think after seeing the data that makes sense, but I kind of would have expected it to not in the same proportion, but I before seeing it expected that there would be kind of a significant incremental increase. And that wasn't the case, and I thought that was kind of neat.
All right, Emma. So you are a Duke graduate.
Yes.
You graduated last year or the year before?
The year before, 2016.
2016. Keaton is a Duke lover, and for those of you who do not know, I work at Duke. So we have a Duke-centric pod going right now. Keaton being the resident troll of the Dynasty Guru, it seems to fit him pretty well. Emma, you seem like a completely nice person, so I don't fully understand the Duke thing, but I'll allow it. But you, a while back, had mentioned your embracing of the villain role, which is something that Duke is often looked to as. Is that true?
Yeah, it's a really, really fun to have like one aspect of you that's just totally loathed by just about everyone, this podcast excluded. It's fun to lean into. It's fun to like have something that everyone just hates that doesn't actually have anything to do with me. Yes, I enjoy and wholeheartedly embrace the villain role. And I'm looking forward to doing so, especially this year with the recruiting class Duke has. So, yeah.
All right. So we wanted to kind of do something a little bit different on this pod, and that is to maybe do a quick, I guess, would you call it a draft, Keaton? Like a snake draft, I guess you could say. Maybe we could each pick one or two.
Are we going to draft? I had two.
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should draft, just because I think that you might have one of mine.
Oh, come on, man.
I'm just saying, let Emma go first, because she's the guest, and then you can go second, because then you can snipe me. And we can each pick two of the best baseball villains in our mind. Emma, do you want to go first?
Sure. I'm honored. But this is maybe the most obvious baseball villain, but since I'm picking first, I'm going to go with Ty Cobb. Which is an interesting one to me because it's in the last couple years seems like so much of his villainousness has actually been like there's not much historical root in it. Like there have been, I don't know if you've kept up with any of that, that there have been a couple projects that I've looked at, like was this biography that deemed him such a terrible person actually that true, and it turns out that a lot of that is really murky, that he might not be as just awful a person as everyone assumed he was,
as openly racist as he's claimed to be.
Yeah, that's in the biography, that apparently he's like not all of that is totally there. So that's like an interesting level to this villainous, like it, like how much does he deserve to be remembered as this all-time villain. And so for that and that, like, mystery around his evil, I think I'm going to go with Ty Cobb in the number one spot.
That's a pretty good one. Mine is a little sentimental. Growing up in New England in the late 90s, early 2000s, for me it's A-Rod. Being a huge Red Sox fan, A-Rod was like the perfect villain. This was a guy that we almost got, then ended up going to the Yankees, and then ended up punching Veritek in the face, who's the darling of the Boston Red Sox, and then trying to slap the ball out of Arroyo's glove in the ALCS. He was just the perfect, perfect villain for not only just Red Sox fans, but baseball as a whole. And I feel like he's a pretty solid choice at number two. And I'm curious, was that the one that you had also picked?
He was definitely in my queue, but he was third for me.
Oh, okay.
I feel like just because A-Rod isn't as big as an asshole as I want him to be. I mean, now, especially the way he's been commentating, what he's brought to baseball lately. I mean, it's kind of lovable at this point. He's probably one of the best broadcasters MLB has right now, wouldn't you say?
I would say, yeah, I would definitely say that. As a player, though, he was fun to hate.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to take two picks. First pick I have, I feel like, is kind of the obvious one, which is Barry Bonds. Just what he did, the record he broke, how he broke it, his cavalier attitude towards it all. I find him to be just kind of an arrogant prick in general, and it's admirable, like he is who he is, but as far as his approach to it and when it happened, yeah, Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, Jose Canseco, they were all doing it too, but he was probably the one that got the most pub just because he's the one that broke the record. So that's number one. However, number two, the one that I feel is closer to my heart, and Emma, you might be a little too young for this guy, but he is... Deadspin has an article, your former website has an article dated March 6, 2014, which is Albert Bell is still a glorious asshole. And growing up in the mid-90s for the White Sox, he was the first $100 million player. And the White Sox were notoriously stingy with their money, but yet they doled out the cash for him. He I mean, like, everything about him, the suspensions, the abrasiveness. He chased trick-or-treaters off of his property with a gun. Like, he sits around. he's been suspended multiple times. He got into a fist fight. He launched a pitcher that was trying to break up a double, or trying to, the pitcher was trying to input a double play, and he launched him into space. I'm going to send you this YouTube video and just watch it if you can when you have a second. It is amazing. He literally just took him and just punched him right in the face. And, you know, baseball is what it is now, but he's probably the worst. He was an Indians player prior to coming over to the White Sox. Then he went to Baltimore and kind of faded out into existence, but he's been still kind of an asshole. Any interviews that you read from him after he played, he still talks about how he was the greatest, how he was screwed out of an MVP, how Justin Verlander's trash. He just kind of goes into like any number of things. I feel like he would be an amazing interview. So Albert Bell is my second pick.
That's a good one.
He also, I don't know how villainous this part is, but the corked bat incident, where he made, what was it, I think Paul Sorrento, like, climb through the ceiling to retrieve his corked bat so the umps couldn't investigate it.
Oh, yep. That's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
He was shady as hell, but when he was on your team, you had to love him. I mean, he was a part of that, like, really awesome, like, early 90s Indian squad with Jim Thome and Omar Vizquel and David Justice. Yeah, Young Manny. I mean, it was just, he was a fun guy to be a, like, watch and hate from afar. And then when he got on your team, he was an asshole, but he was still your asshole. And you had to love that about him. So, okay.
So my next pick will be Bryce Harper, because I feel like he's the perfect poster boy for what I want baseball to be, but all the old curmudgeons hate. And you know, throwing the "that's a clown" question, bro, out there in post game interviews, and the flipping his hair after a home run. I love everything about Bryce Harper, and I fully embrace him and the fact that baseball truthers or diehards absolutely hate him.
I feel like he's the baseball equivalent of a Stepford wife. Like, he just looks like just the perfect American boy that you just want to, like, just shake, maybe somewhat punch in the face. But yeah, his home run derby was pretty fun though to watch.
Yes.
That was, I don't really care for the home run derby, but man, that was a fun one. All right, Emma, you're up. Last pick.
All right. I think for the last one, I'm going to go with George Steinbrenner. Mostly just cause
that's a great one.
Yeah. Very similar, in spirit to Duke as a villain, in that most of it's just winning. And, you know, really when it comes down to it, it's just like the willingness to pay people a lot and be pretty ruthless and just not care what anyone thinks and go all in. Like, that is a really good spirit to have as a villain, I think. And he did it just about better than anyone.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a great pick.
Mm-hmm.
I had two honorable mentions too. So I had Pete Rose for obvious reasons. And then I'm curious to get Adam's take on this, but I hated AJ Pierzynski.
Yeah, no, he's kind of like with Albert Bell when he was with the White Sox. He was an asshole, but he was your asshole. So, I mean, I'm fine with him. He didn't really do anything for us. He won a World Series with him, but I mean, yeah, he definitely has a punchable face. My honorable mention is going to be Rachel Phelps, who is the I don't know what the word would be, the character that was the owner for the Cleveland Indians in Major League.
Good one.
Yes. I mean, like, that was a really good, that was an evil villain. I liked her. Okay.
Yeah, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, and maybe we can catch you again sometime in the off season.
Yeah, sure, I'd love to. But yeah, this was great.
Do you have anything real quick before you go? Do you have anything you want to plug? You toss your Twitter out there for some follows or anything?
Oh, sure. My Twitter handle is my name, which the last name is kind of a mouthful there. But yeah, just at Emma Bachelary, and I'm at Sports Illustrated. So yeah. Sunrise. See the freckles on your face. You've been singing songs in your sleep. And I think that's the cutest thing. Melodies from when we first met. Do you remember driving in my car? Doesn't seem too far to Boston. When we're going la da 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 da.
All right. We want to thank Emma again for coming on to the pod. And to wrap up, we're going to highlight the top pod spec segment, and we're also going to hit on the In and Out series for those who are in and competing. We're going to highlight a couple guys to buy. For those who are out and we're building, we're going to highlight a couple guys to try to get in on early. All right, so first let's talk about the top pod spec. Keaton, do you want to start with your guy first?
Sure. So we had originally intended to do this part with Emma, but we ran out of time. So we gave her the win, and we're going to just touch on the players so you guys at least still get the whatever are the junk behind their guys. So a guy I went with is Ian Anderson. He has just completely dominated A-ball at every level. Right now he's at high A, number 61 on Jesse's top 240 for June, because he just released July today. And I have actually no idea where he landed because I haven't checked it yet. But on June, he was number 61. So he's really, really good. And he gets a ton of Ks, and he's reined in the walks that kind of played to him last year's ground ball rate. It's in the upper 40s. That's tremendous. So far this season, ERA is 2.57, 1.12 whip, 113 Ks to 36 walks. He's got a plus fastball, above average curve and change that both play off his fastball really well. That was a hiccup and a burp, man. So above average change and curve that play off his fastball really well to generate strikeouts. And he is of a loaded Atlanta system. He's the guy that I'm the most jazzed about.
All right. Well, I'm just going to let our listeners know now that you are a cheater. Ian Anderson is ranked 46 on Jesse's updated top 240. And we try to stay outside of the top 50. So Keaton automatically loses. Thanks for playing. All right, my guy. I'm going to talk about Shed Long. Shed Long is a second baseman in the Cincinnati organization. He is almost 23 years old. And right now he's in Double A. He should be up in the major leagues probably at the end of this year for a cup of coffee, and he's somebody that you could keep an eye on going forward. In Jesse's recent top 240, Shed Long has actually dropped a little bit. In Jesse's monthly prospect update for the infielders in July, he listed Shed Long as somebody to discuss in the bad section. Jesse said, following a blazing start in which Long slashed 301, 366, 507 through May 18th, he slumped over the past 2.5 months, and he was 1-for-19 with 8 strikeouts, hitting just 204, 295, 333 in July. He's rebounded slightly, and in fact, he's gone on quite a tear. He is at 262, 354, 411. With a 350 wOBA. The guy can hit the piss out of the ball. He is somebody that just makes contact no matter where he goes. He has a pretty strong K-minus BB rate. I think that if you're in an OBP league, he is definitely somebody that you want to take a look at and keep an eye on. And if you are keeping up with these lists and your opponents are as well, he might be somebody that you want to kick the tires on. I think that he will definitely be a mainstay. I don't see anybody in the Cincinnati system really stopping him from coming up over the next year. So you're going to find out pretty quickly what he has. He is not a huge power guy. He has 50 game power, according to Fangraphs, but I really feel like the hit tool is something that we can keep an eye on and definitely value. He also has a little bit of speed. He will steal you a few bags. So that's my guy.
Two things.
No. Okay, go ahead.
Did you mean sit on the tires instead of kick the tires?
Yeah, let's sit on them.
And the second one, what do you think Shed Long does in his spare time?
I mean, he's spending a lot of time out back avoiding his wife. I mean, he is not messing around. He's probably a woodworker of sorts. I mean, he makes chimes, wood chimes. And I think that he probably enjoys it. He probably makes it out of a really nice knife, a hand knife that his grandfather gave him when he was younger.
I think Shedlong has his own lawn mowing service, where it's just him going around to relatives and mowing their lawns. But he's like in his early 20s while he's doing this.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, he's definitely needing to make some money because he's in the minor league systems right now. So
right, yeah. That or he's like a crawfish fisherman, where he's just going around trying to find crawdads all day.
You think it like crawdads? He's not going out doing any deep sea fishing. It's just nearby, like swamp type animals?
Yes.
Okay.
Shedlong is not a deep sea fisherman.
Yeah, yeah, he's more a swamp guy, right, for yeah, sure.
He's overalls in the mud and just sticking his hands down there and seeing what he comes out with.
With a huge dip in his mouth.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I don't really know much about Daniel Lowe. Do you know much about him?
Jesse had some wonderful things to say on the Top 500 Part 1 that we did. Go check that out for Jesse's awesome words.
Daniel Lowe, he is recently promoted to AAA. He is in the Tampa Bay Rays system, so Ian is probably really jazzed about that right now. And as Keaton said, we will leave a link inside our podcast write-up for you to go ahead and take a look at what Daniel Lowe is and what he's all about. And for our listeners, don't forget, at the end of the baseball season, we are going to have a playoff of all the top pod specs where we want you to come in and vote round by round to see who the top fantasy baseball pod spec is for the 2018 season. Okay, moving on. Let's talk about the in or out series. If you are buying in and you are competing, we have a shortstop for you. Keaton, do you want to go first as I tell my 2-year-old or 4-year-old to go back to bed?
Sure. So, my guy for buying, if you are competing, is Jose Peraza. He rarely strikes out, which is great, and he gets on base at a pretty darn good clip. So, he has a bunch of steals, so if you're hurting for steals help, he's the guy you can go get. His launch angle is actually really good. In the mid-teens, which is kind of surprising for a guy with his profile. But accompanying that, his exit velocity is really, really bad. Low 80s, which is, again, for that profile, kind of what you would expect. He's really good for average and OBP leagues. He's not going to cost you very much, and he'll help in average and OBP, and he'll get a whole bunch of steals. So for a guy that can at least hit 2+ categories, depending on your league setup, and isn't going to cost you very much, he's a guy that can certainly help your squad down the stretch. And that's my guy.
My guy is Eduardo Escobar, for those who are buying in. He has multi-positional eligibility, which is something that I absolutely love and overvalue. He is a third baseman right now for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's going to play all season. He's put together a hell of a 2018 campaign, averaging a 280 with an 849 OPS. He is going to end up with 20+ bombs. He's going to have a couple steals. He's going to be in a great lineup. He's been batting in the heart of the order for the Arizona Diamondbacks. So I like him. I think that he's going to continue to play. I don't think he's going to get benched at all. And he is somebody that's not old, right? He's 29. So he's definitely going to have a season to remember, and it probably won't replicate. However, it isn't something where he's going to have a complete fall off. I think this is sustainable. I think his hit tool is the real deal. And I think he's going to have enough contextual factors around him to make him a value. And he's going to be coming in at a not crazy cost. So he's definitely somebody to sit on the tires with.
Cool. So rebuilding real quickly, guy that I've talked about a ton on previous pods, Carter Kiboom. I love that dude. Go get him.
All right. My guy that I think at least you should investigate in on. Corey Seager, he is somebody that was obviously out for this year. He is somebody that will probably be out at the beginning of next year. The most recent news on him was that he had arthroscopic surgery on his hip. He's dinged up, and people are starting to say that he is the next Troy Tulowitzki. I think that's a bit overstated. I don't anticipate that happening. And Corey Seager is pretty damn good. So if there's somebody that's out there and competing this year, while Corey Seager sits on the DL, if you have a couple players that you can offer up that can really put that person over the top, Corey Seager is young enough and he's good enough to where he might be somebody that you can buy in on low right now. Keaton, we have a number of listener questions. We have two listener questions. First email here is from Drew. He says, great pod, guys. Two questions about a team a year or likely two away from contention. First, the league leader needs pitching and wanted Rodon. I asked for Keston Hira and he accepted. I feel like a good trade for both, or did I give up too much for Hira?
No, you did not give up too much for Hira. You won that deal by a mile. I love it. Great trade.
I agree. Rodon is somebody that's going to be good, but he's never going to be great. And he's already been injured enough. He had an insanely high volume of innings pitched when he was playing for NC State. And I feel like that kind of really messed him up for the long term. Speaking as a White Sox fan, I hope that that's not true, but I would not trust his arm or shoulder moving ahead. All right, this second part of Drew's email is actually something really interesting, and I can't wait to hear what Keaton has to say. Drew talked about getting trapped up in prospect love sometimes, and I'm always picking pre-hype AA players, so I'm always a couple years away. Any tips on handling a team full of prospects and developing it into a contender? How much is patience and how much is flipping the prospects for established major leaguers, and when is the time right?
So I have a pretty interesting take on this one. So this is kind of through the first 3 years of when my home league became a dynasty, I did exactly that, and I just hoarded guys, and I was like, dude, my farm is so good. And it was kind of boring. And I picked my favorites, which were Xander Bogaerts as the main one. This is like 4 years ago now, so I can't remember the other ones. But I picked like three or four of my favorites and then traded all the rest for established major leaguers. And then I won the league the next year. So that would kind of be my advice. It worked for me. Maybe it'll work for you. Pick a couple of your faves and then just start trading the bejesus out of the rest of them, because unless they are literally your farm is 5-1 Soto's, 5 Ronald Acuna's, and another 5 Vlad Jr.'s, then you're going to have a lot of busts in that pile. Like, actually, I remember one of the guys that I ended up trading was Byron Buxton, and thank God he was not one of the ones that I kept. But at the time, he was the top prospect in baseball coming off of the 2 years of being the number one prospect. So his value was through the roof. Got an awesome return. Oh, Aaron Judge. That was one of the other ones I kept. And that worked out. It worked out great for me. And the best part is next year, you're going to have a bunch more draft picks. You can pick up some more prospects. So there's always more prospects. And people's hype cycles are so much more rapid than they used to be. I would sell off as many of them as you can if you're ready to compete. And just keep a couple of your faves.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. In my home league, my dynasty home league, that's essentially what I did. And you really have to find your guys and stick with them, because there are going to be other people that are chomping at the bit to get them. But I was kind of in the same boat where I loaded up on prospects, and I had to give away a couple really good ones in order to get back really solid major leaguers. And I'm talking about giving up people like Vlad Jr. for Freddie Freeman, or giving up, at the time it was a huge trade where I was giving up Julio Urias and Willy Adames, and God, who is the other guy?
Yeah, look at how much value Urias had. And you could have sold him for the world. And he may never pitch a full season.
Right. And I gave up those two names, a slew of other names. Oh, no. I'm going to backstep here. The trade that I made included Vladimir Jr., Willy Adames, and Julio Urias for Carlos Correa. There were a number of other pieces involved in that, but those were the three headliners. And I did not want to give up Vlad Jr., but I had to in order to get Correa. But it was just somebody that I was willing to invest in and take because I had Acuna and Benintendi in my pipeline too, and those were the two I wanted to keep. So find your guys, like Keaton said, keep them, but start shipping off the other ones. I agree.
Yeah. And it's going to suck. Like, my favorite prospect was Moncada, and I tried to avoid dealing him. But right before the trade deadline last season, I ended up trading him for Scherzer and Senzel. And I feel like that was incredible value. And that ended up put me over the top and allowed me to win it.
And part of this is having fun with your league too, right? So you got to pick your guys that you're going to enjoy and have on your team for years to come, that you want to keep. And as long as you identify those guys early and you invest in them early, that the return on just your enjoyment of the league is that much more. Okay, last email. This one's from Ethan. Dear Keaton Sarcasm, earlier in the year, I emailed you guys and you read it on the podcast. Thank you for that. 12-team head-to-head dynasty. I received Trey Turner, Alex Wood, Sean Doolittle, and Jesus Sanchez for Max Scherzer, Bud Norris, Paul DeJong, and Brendan Rodgers. Thoughts?
I like Trey Turner a lot, which if you listen to this podcast, something you already knew. I really like Doolittle a lot too. And we just spent a whole bunch of time talking about how when Alex Wood is healthy, he's good. So really kind of matching that up against Scherzer, who's up there in age. But still dominating. Paul DeJong, who I haven't been a league, and I'm just not sure what he is yet. But he's 24, 25. And Brendan Rodgers, who I think is a really darn good shortstop. It's a pretty even trade.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very, very even trade. And honestly, just to touch on this, because these are the only two names that Keaton didn't mention, Sean Doolittle and Bud Norris. I wrote a piece earlier in the year called HODOR, which is stands for Hold Opportunities, Don't Overlook Relievers. Thank you, Keaton, for that name, by the way. And honestly, that's a wash. If I were you, I would have tried to give Sean Doolittle and maybe got a little bit more than Paul DeJong. Oh, wait, no. I would have tried to give Bud Norris and maybe got a little bit more than Sean Doolittle. I think that relievers are a dime a dozen and you can get them any which way. As you can see, Sean Doolittle isn't even playing right now, and who knows if he's going to play the rest of the year.
He's like a fractured toe. You can't really hold that against him.
No, I mean, but he's constantly injured. He's constantly injured, and relievers are a dime a dozen. So if I'm trading away relievers to pick up the next one on the waiver wire.
I like Doolittle way more than Norris.
I don't like either. I think they're both relievers and they're both worthless.
Yet somehow you keep talking about them. All right, so part two.
I receive Matt Olson for Brandon Belt, Alex Wood, and Luis Robert. Pass. I do not like this trade.
Depends. I mean, he does say that he's going for it this season.
So, I think that Brandon Belt and Alex Wood can service you just as much as Matt Olson could.
This season?
Yeah. I mean, Brandon Belt's on the DL right now, but when he's played, he's been excellent this year.
And excellent. Isn't Wood?
He just went on the DL for the first time all year.
So two guys on the DL and a guy who's not going to play this year for Matt Olson, who's doing very good this year.
Do we not like Chris Sale because he's on the DL right now, or do we still value him as a top three pitcher?
He's coming back on Sunday.
So and Alex Wood's going to stay on the minimum.
Coming back on Sunday?
According to the read, he's going to be on the DL for the minimum.
I think it's a lot closer than you're giving it credit for, which is surprising because I don't love Matt Olson as much as Patrick does. But if you're going for it this year, you're going to have to make sacrifice trades like this, which is exactly what it is. So if this helps put you over, it's not a bad trade.
I think he could have given Brandon Belt and Luis Robert or Alex Wood and Luis Robert for Matt Olson. I think if this guy is out and he's looking to rebuild, Luis Robert is a very coveted prospect, and he probably could have gotten that. I think he gave too much for Matt Olson. So he said, in summation, I turned Bryce Harper into Shohei Ohtani, Trey Turner, Matt Olson, and high upside bopper and Sanchez. All right. P.S. What do we do with Max Muncy? Sell for as much as we can. The major slump has Muncy dumps. Has me in the Muncy dumps.
Well,
yeah.
I have the Muncy dumps is now the name of the pod.
Mm-hmm.
I was never as high on Muncy as Patrick again. Just what a shock. But he's been really good this year. I would say ride it out. Things were kind of due to self-correct. I think when it matters in the fantasy playoffs, he'll be back to mashing it again. So I would say hold and not try and worry about it.
Yeah, you're not selling, but I don't know. I'm not a believer in Muncy, and I feel like they have enough pieces there to where they can move it around and not really miss him if he gets limited at bats. So. All right, this has been the Dynasty Guru Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I've been your host, Adam Lawler. Don't look for me. I don't want to be bothered. If you feel it necessary, follow me at the Statcast Era. Your usual host, Ian Hudson, enjoys your attention, and he can be found at the Dynasty Guru website, where some anachronistic or arcane way of describing something is arbitrarily replaced with something equally as arcane and anachronistic. You can find him at USF Hudson, and he is a fantastic follow. You can find Keaton at Keaton TDG. Keaton, what have you written recently?
The final triple play. And now I have Hooray! To find something else to fill my time, which I probably will with some commentary pieces, because those are less intensive. And I need a break for like a month. So
yes.
Now that I've gotten the last triple play out of the way, I'm ready to die.
That will be up next week, hopefully before you hear the next pod. Patrick is at the Green Magnus, which is kind of like at the Green Monster, but with his last name. He finds that to be extremely witty. Patrick will also have written the triple play. We are going to have that up again next week. Patrick had family visiting in from China. That's why he's not here this week. But he will be back and blowing your mind with the hottest of takes next week.
The best part about that Green Magnus thing. So we were friends for like 2 years before he finally asked us if we got it. And we were like, no, what the fuck does that mean?
I thought it was like some rep, like him being like, I don't know. I didn't understand it either, but after he after he explained it, I was like, oh, okay. Anyway, so TDG plugs. We can be found on Twitter at Dynasty Guru and at Dynasty's Child. You can join us on the Facebook group where somebody talks to you. Not me, but somebody does.
Tyler's you can in there.
Okay. And you can email us at dynastieschildpod@gmail.com. Again, please rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. It's a fantastic thing for us, and it really gets our names out there as far as being able to help any number of dynasty owners and managers. Thanks to Jackie Jade for our cool logo. You can check out her Instagram at jackie.jpg. That is jacqui.jpg. Lastly, thanks very much to Caraway for the use of our intro song, Raising the Dead, and our outro song, The Last Song, off their self-titled EP. Go check them out at wearecaraway.bandcamp.com. That is two R's in Caraway. That's going to do it for us, folks. Have a great day, and as always, be the best bird dog you can be.
And you're a straight lace sinner, and all that I've got, kissing me out in the parking lot. Poisonous venom biting down on my lip. You turn and walk away with the sway of your hip. I'm so close to getting what I need, but you're so intent on making my heart bleed. So put some more Vaseline right onto your teeth. You don't want that smile sticking when you're lying to me.